Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast, new podcast. It's called Reconstructing the Psyche. So we've changed the name, and you might notice there's a couple of different people here with me. And we also have video, so that's another thing. No video before, no two co-podcast hosts, and new name. And so I want to introduce Jason and Anil, my co-hosts. How are both of you doing tonight?
I Jason. Figured go alphabetical.
Okay.
Yeah, go alphabetical, man.
I'm doing well. I am just back from a wonderful trip to Paris and excited to be talking to some interesting people this evening.
All right. Yeah, Jason, right. I am doing well. And yeah, I'm excited to dig into the topic of the night.
Yeah. So we all know each other from places that we don't need to talk about too much here, but we're
prison.
We hang out outside of podcast land, and we thought it would be a good idea to kind of talk on the computer and have some good conversations, right? So we're looking forward to this. This is going to be different. So the way that we're kind of doing it this time is instead of just kind of like going free form, we're going to have a certain movie that we're talking about, and each person on a different week, whoever kind of decides to do it that week, is going to say, this is the theory that I believe is going on in this movie. This is kind of like what the deeper meaning of this movie is about. And they're going to present it to the other two, and we're going to just kind of like have the conversation go from there. I thought it was a different way to do it, and the co-host agreed, and we're going to try that out tonight, right? So the movie we watched this week is Get Out. And who is the person who's going to do the theory tonight?
I think that was going to be you.
I thought it was... Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can do my best.
Okay, all right. So I'm gonna present this to both of you, and we'll just kind of see how it goes. So, you know, Get Out, really excellent movie made about, I don't know, what was that, 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah,
I was rewatching this movie, and the theory that I came up with is that this is about bored white people.
Okay.
That's it. No.
All right. Well, that's a short stop. Podcast.
That's part of it. I mean, okay. a lot of bored white people. The idea that I have in regards to this movie is that Get Out is trying to talk about a larger sociocultural kind of theme going on in terms of white people. Specifically white people who live in the suburbs, who are affluent, who have a lot of money, who have a lot of wealth, who have a lot of status, and kind of are just bored with their life. And so I kind of do the quote unquote of suburban slumber. And my theory is that what this movie is trying to get at is that these bored white people are using African-Americans, minorities, people in lower socioeconomic status to make their life more exciting. And so obviously we're seeing that throughout the movie where black people are being snatched and the white people are going into their bodies and taking their lives over. And it's kind of like giving them some youth and vitality again and giving them a new life that they weren't having before. I have more to say, but I just want to see what are your thoughts on that theory, and maybe you guys can go from there.
Yeah. Oh man, it's funny. I don't think I would have ever considered boredom as being a part in that film, because I think the actions always felt a little bit more insidious and diabolical than someone who is effectively bored. So more than anything, I think I'm curious to see how you're going to expand on that idea, because I have a feeling that you're going to take it to some places that I'm maybe thinking about, but I don't, I'm yeah, I'm well, intrigued to see thinking? Where we're going. I mean, I think the sort of the I think I guess the face value read or one of the easier reads of the film is to just say it's just an allegory for, you know, race relations in America. The whole idea mm-hmm. of there are so many ways you could sort of make sense of white folks, like you said, snatching up black people and infiltrating their minds to turn them into something else. I mean, it feels, at least to me, yeah. like this whole idea of effectively what we did to Africans to turn them into slaves, that it wasn't just this physical piece. There was also this psychological piece where we gave them a different narrative for who they were.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. I like that.
Okay.
So yeah, where are you at with it, Jason?
In some ways I'm with Neil, and in some ways I see some different stuff. I agree with the, I didn't see the boredom as part of it. So I also am interested to see where you go with that. It made me kind of wonder about cultural appropriation, if there's some of that element as to what this is, you know, in some ways, are they looking to inhabit this kind of black body in a way, but then the characters are also mm-hmm. deprived of what makes them black and who they are in the first place, because it's this white soul, whatever, psyche in this black body, but it's mm-hmm. devoid of what makes it what it is in the first place. So I wonder if that was a message around cultural mm-hmm. appropriation. That's why cultural appropriation is what it is it robs it of its anchor, of its significance, because it's rooted in that person and their experience and their culture, as opposed to
yes
like, the outside of it.
Absolutely. Yes. And yeah, maybe speaking to that a little bit more, the sense of the lack of spirit or the lack of soul, kind of like you were saying, that mm-hmm. happens when another culture kind of like takes something and tries to appropriate it for themselves, is because they take like the things, right? They take the objects and like the shell of it all and bring it into their own possession. But that never translates to it having the spirit or soul within it, which is kind of like where culture comes from. Like culture comes from the spirit or soul of a thing, and then like culture develops from it. And so we're kind of stealing that culture, but we don't have the vitality within it when we steal it from whoever it might be.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
That was kind of what I hadn't thought of that until you talked kind of about that, you know, taking on this on from a place of boredom. But yeah, it feels, you know, I liked your use of the word vitality, right? It robs it of its energy, of its life that makes it what it is, right? You can reenact it, right?
Yeah.
But it's, the life it's force. Hollow in some ways.
Totally. But like boredom, right? Isn't that kind of what, I don't know. There might be a lot of different ways of explaining what boredom is or defining it, mm-hmm. but boredom kind of signifies to me in a way a hollowness, a lack of interior vitality. Like we're talking about, there's kind of like nothing going on inside, and maybe we're just kind of like grabbing at things and hoping something kind of sticks or makes us excited, but we don't have the juice flowing inside of us to make that happen necessarily. I don't know. I'm wondering what you think, Anil.
Yeah, I'm trying to take it in. I mean, I'm really, I guess I think the thing that's sticking out to me is I'm trying to figure out how, well, let me back up a little bit. The idea that there's sort of a void or some part of the people that, you know, behave this way that's empty or soulless sort of resonates insofar as it means that there's a disconnect from themselves and from other people.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I guess I'm when you say bored, I'm imagining like a kid that's like sitting in a car or something. I think maybe that's, I'm struggling with the language a little bit. So is there maybe something, maybe expand what you mean when you say bored?
Yeah. Maybe it's more of the sort of midlife to end life boredom that occurs, along with what I'm talking about moving into the suburbs, for instance. It's a good example of you're spending most of your 30s to like mid 30s working up, right? Where we're going to school, we're going to college, we're trying to get a good job, then we're working to attain all these things and and build up the hierarchy and get up in that, in the organization or whatever happens. Finally get into the, that place that we're supposed to be at, into the suburbs, and we have our wealth and we have our accumulation of things and everything of that. And then just stagnation. Not, I'm not saying this is like everybody, but I think that's a common thing that we're finding in America specifically, but probably like Western civilization, is that you get to this certain point and then it's like, okay, now where do I go? And like, why am I even living? Perhaps there's a lot of that meaning that has been kind of stripped because of the attempt at attaining things and kind of like moving up that hierarchy. And so I think I'm referring more to that midlife sort of boredom. And, you know, we're obviously not talking about the kids, because we're talking about who are these people that are snatching African-Americans. It's all middle-aged white people, people who are, or people who are ending, getting near the end of their life. Where's the excitement coming from at that point? I don't know.
I guess I think maybe what I'm hearing then is it's more about like their sense of purpose or direction. And
yeah,
I don't
definitely
know, where are you at, Jason?
Get that more, you know, like I was thinking it's interesting that we talked about it as like this hollowness in the quality of the host body, so to say, but that it also sounds like this hollowness of purpose, of fulfillment, is what leads them to, in some ways, continue that in a even more destructive way. You know, I also felt, obviously, in a almost literal way, it's an enslaving of their bodies for the purpose of bettering the life of the person who purchases their body. So obviously that there's that, you know, the auction, the silent auction scene in the movie that plays that out pretty literally. But I wonder if there's not necessarily an anti-capitalist, but a like a recognition of the hollowness or the lack of fulfillment in some of the ways that we pursue, you know, purpose and legacy and whatnot. And so that leads them to just, we'll just continue it in a new, different, younger, healthier body and just disregard that person's dreams and
you get
essence.
I think there's like some hints of that coming out early on in the movie when the dad is showing Chris around the house and he's talking about all the places that he's traveled to and talking about like what an honor it is to like go to these other places and whatnot. And at least to me, it gives me the sense of this kind of guy who's, he's looking for something outside of himself. He's like going all over the world, taking these artifacts and taking photos with different people in different cultures and like sharing in that. But it seems like he can't find it inside. And so he's going to all these places to like get it. And I'm wondering if that's even part of it, where the people in the movie have found we cannot get it no matter how much wealth and status and power we have, because these are all very wealthy people too. It doesn't seem like they're short on cash, and maybe it's that they are finding they can't get it from outside. And it's like, well, what's the next thing we can do? Maybe we're going to take another person's body and the vitality that they have in their body, and we're going to go into that, and that's how we're going to get it finally.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that really speaks to this idea that there's, again, a void, or there's some sort of, it's funny when you were talking about, I mean, Jason, you started to bring up like economics a little bit. It's like, I was like, okay, who's going to start like talking about Marx and the idea of sort of alienation from the way that all the different ways that people are alienated from, you know, themselves, their labor, their neighbor, the other person that they're, you know. And I think that a lot of that sort of comes up in the way that you're talking about how he's searching for an identity in all these places. Or I guess the other piece of it would potentially be that his identity is the person who wields power in such a way that he can just sort of drift in and out of cultures without having to be connected to it. Because that's also another form of privilege, I think, to be able to be disconnected from kind of everything.
You know, I mean,
it's a good point.
Thinking about like the sunken place, right? So the place where I can't remember the mother's name, hypnotizes, you know, these folks and puts them into this psychological sunken place. I wonder if like the, and here's, we get back into that kind of economic talk, but like, are we in the sunken place now in terms of a spiritual state? Like, is the stirring and clinking of the tea, the media, and the just constant hum and like drone of all the work that we must accomplish, and like that puts us in this place of spiritual disconnection that they have no problem with literally inhabiting another person's body, just because that's what productivity, that's what continuing your own interests and, you know, acquisition and whatnot says you can do.
Yeah. I agree.
I like it.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
No, it's a good point. I don't really have much to say. What do you think, Anil?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, intriguing to I guess I'm, my mind's sort of starting to wander to this idea of like economics again, and what it, the way that we've sort of made sense of our world means there is this, to control the body of another is sort of the ultimate expression of the capitalist, I suppose, because you're always exploiting someone else's physical labor for your benefit. Mm-hmm. And this is just sort of like a ramped up hyperbolic version of that, where not only are they sort of like taking people that they're choosing from a specific class, turning them into something else, but now they're also taking their bodies, which is, I don't know, just another way of sort of the exploitation of the other for the means of one person or someone with power.
Yes. But so we end up seeing also in the grandpa and grandma characters in this film, a couple examples of people who have taken those bodies and they're older individuals. And so what are they doing now? They're essentially just hanging out around the house, cleaning up and doing chores and pretty much nothing else. They don't really have anything they're doing with their lives. I would say they're sort of bored in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And what had to happen for them to continue their existence, because they were going to die otherwise, is they had to steal the bodies of these two people to continue on for what, though? What's the purpose of them being alive anymore? Is there really much? I don't know. It didn't seem like it to me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where that hits you, Jason, but again, to me, that also feels like very allegorically connected to sort of the way that we think of the world. Like, there is no, a lot of people can't articulate a purpose beyond sort of making it to tomorrow or maybe just sort of consuming endlessly, which I suppose they could, but they're not even doing that in the end. They're just, cleaning, like you said, shuffling around.
Yeah.
I mean, like they've kind of settled into their purposelessness, it sounds like, you know. I don't know if obviously Jordan Peele and or whatever writers helped with that, like, wanted this to be a depiction not of something glorious, but like it doesn't give them what they're looking for, right? It's not this miraculous thing that works out all that well for them. Because it's this new body does
No.
nothing to, fix or, support the actualization of the soul or spirit or psyche or whatever transfers over from that original body to this new one. It doesn't fix what was broken in the first place.
The Andre character, I think it's Andre, right? The guy who was snatched at the beginning of the movie.
I can
I
look
feel
it
like
up.
that might have been his name. Same thing with him, right? What is he doing? He's kind of like just hanging out with his wife all day, and they don't get out of the house, and it's like they're just there to kind of exist, basically, but nothing beyond that, it seems.
Logan, I think is the name. I have it pulled up right now.
Okay. Andre might have been a different
By the
character.
way, I
Okay.
was particularly struck by that opening scene where the first person who's snatched is walking through this neighborhood, and it felt like such a role reversal, right? For what we're expecting that character probably to feel, right? So often is a black man the character that is the one people are afraid of walking around at night, and for him to be like afraid was such a very different experience that I'm sure it was in obviously the very first shot of a movie. I'm sure the director and the writers are so very intentional about, but I thought that it set the tone for the movie that this is going to be a little bit different.
And I think that's where I started to come to this theory through, is right there at the beginning, where he's also walking into a suburb, and he's saying, like, he doesn't know where he is, and he doesn't feel comfortable there. And you see suburbs usually as like these mazes that you sort of can't get out of if you ever go into a deep enough suburb. And it's just like the same types of rows of houses over and over again. And I can see that being sort of disconcerting for a person who maybe doesn't come from that world necessarily. And then he gets taken. And then when the movie kind of progresses and Chris goes to the parents' house, they're in like an even deeper sort of suburb thing, right? It's not like this isn't the normal suburb anymore. This is now suburb where then you don't have the next house for a couple miles from you, and you're going to be even more lost and in a maze out there. And so that's kind of where I was like generating that theory from a little bit, is that in beginning parts of that movie.
Yeah, that's such an interesting read. I mean, not to say anything horrible about Orange County, but I don't know if either of you have ever driven through like the literally like 5 to 10 miles of just like houses if you're in like South Orange County, that's Southeast Orange County. And it's even for someone who, completely sort of privileged in my own way and like take race out of it, like there are moments for me in some of those parts where I'm like, it feels eerie. There's something unsettling about sort of the sterile, like even though they're all homes, it feels isolated in a way, at least to me. So yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. And the other thought I had too, and I don't know if this was a piece of it, was you're talking about how remote the house is that they're at, and I wonder if that is maybe even meant to in some ways sort of remind you of like a plantation where it's just one big place
Absolutely.
surrounded by the woods, and there's just kind of no escape. There's nowhere to go.
Even if you wanted to get out, you don't know how to get out of there.
Right. Yeah. Where do you go? And also you're in such an unfriendly area. I think doesn't that that's what happens, right? There's isn't there if I'm remembering properly, he does try to, towards the end of the film, there's no help to be found, and then at the end when you assume that the cop car is coming, you're like, oh no, this is also going to be a problem.
That's
Like,
the actual alternate ending, though. There is an
right,
alternate
okay. Yes,
ending
that's what I'm thinking of.
where maybe you saw it at some point, but there were a cop. It actually is a cop, and they're like,
Yeah.
get down on the ground, basically. Which is, yeah, that would have been a super bummer ending, but
That's right.
It's definitely a little bit more realistic in a sense, in terms of mm-hmm. like, this is actually what would happen in this scenario.
One of the unique things obviously Jordan Peele's a great, you know, writer and director, that he accomplished there was like, I heard him talk about how there was an alternate ending and it was a lot darker, right? Because it was so interesting for him to be able to place audiences in a position where they were scared when the police arrived, right? And that mm-hmm. when it wasn't actually mm-hmm. the police, people cheered because that meant he was rescued.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. I remember both endings, and I do remember hearing Jordan Peele talk about that. And I think, at least from what I can recall, he said that he thought that ending, that, like you said, Michael, was probably more sort of accurate to our world, would be too dark of an ending for that film. Like he didn't want it to end as sort of as a tragedy, I guess, even mm-hmm. though it was tragic mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is, you're speaking to that element though of being out there in the woods in a very isolated locale, and mm-hmm. there's no help to be found, and you know, you're trapped out there. And I think we definitely get that sense in that ending. I'm thinking about, so I want to go back to this theory again, and maybe if we don't want to go any further with it, we don't have to. I think my light just gave out. It's okay. So the other piece that I was like really focusing on, and maybe this is because I've been watching sports and like NFL and whatnot recently, is that I really feel like this white boredom thing and the need to kind of like take the minority or take the African-American as like the way to kind of feel invigorated and to have like a better experience in life is sort of mirrored within professional sports a lot. You see this, I mean, I don't know. I think this is just kind of like, this is how it is sort of in professional sports, in that most of the team owners are very rich white men. Mm-hmm. And most teams in the United States are not in like the cities necessarily. They're in cities in like middle America. And when you look mm-hmm. at like an NFL game, when you look at a baseball game, when you look at a basketball game, most of the fans there are middle-class white people, and they're looking for a good time. And I get this sense sometimes with sports, in that it's that outlet that people need to like feel mm-hmm. like they have something to root for. They have something to like live for in a way. Mm-hmm. I think about like the Green Bay Packers, for instance, perfect example of a team. Probably almost all their fans are middle-class white people who live or die for that team. And it doesn't even matter if they're playing. It's just like, that's kind of like what our life revolves around. But who are the players? Who are the players that are fielding every day and every week are all minority African-Americans or people from lower socioeconomic status. Those are the people on those teams, and that's kind of like what we're rooting for and where we're getting our kind of like juice from. We're not getting it from our own lives necessarily. That was other, like, I don't know what your guys' thoughts on that is.
I mean, yeah, if you want to, I think the NFL is a great place to start if you want to talk about the embodiment of sort of the sins of America and the way that
colonialism.
Like, yeah, and the way that bodies are sort of destroyed for the entertainment slash, like,
oh my gosh,
to extract value, like, yeah, it's, I think it's a really
running backs. Point. Running backs can't be vital after age 30. So yeah. Basically, you have like 5 or 6 years as a running back to do your thing, and then after that, you're done because they just pound you into the ground.
Yes, I mean, like, have you seen? It's kind of old now, but there was like a video of Jerome Bettis. Do you remember? I don't know if you saw this. The dude can't even go up and down stairs. It takes him like 25 minutes to get out of bed in the morning. And like, obviously it made him wealthy, but I think he was an exception. I think there are a lot of people who just get sort of destroyed for the, yeah, for the spectacle that other people sort of can derive their meaning from, which is, I don't even know where to go.
I
from
can
there.
Jump in.
That's crazy.
It's a very,
I was thinking, and this is kind of an interestingly, not necessarily right wing, but some kind of direction that way, where, you know, folks talk about, I don't disagree with it, folks talk about it being similar nowadays to like the Colosseum, and that's what I was looking up. You know, like, I can't remember the phrase, but, you know, like,
yeah,
bread and blood is what they give you to distract you, right? It's this circus that distracts you from all the shenanigans that are going on, right? Is they would give, I think, food and drink and blood at the Colosseum to distract from the poverty and wars and everything else going on. You know, and I think it's we pursue these hollow things because we're wrapped up in the, you know, the our own spiritual, you know, philosophical sunken place, right? We've lost that connection to what is important, and we pursue whatever definition of progress we're told is accurate. And, you know, I think we just pursue things on a timeline that makes them more harmful than they need to be, right? You know, like one lifetime is not enough.
Yeah. I also think in regards to this, just like the amount of money that's being made in professional sports, basically off the backs of the athlete, right? And
yeah.
So obviously it seems like athletes are starting to get more money, which is a good thing, and that like people are getting paid. Usually there's a big disparity between like the lower paying athletes and the higher paying athletes, but it still makes you wonder, like, is that still enough? You know, is it still enough for the fact that some of these people are destroying their bodies, destroying their minds, and doing it for the sake of people who are bored, the fans who kind of like need something, and the people who own the teams who are making billions of dollars off of the players.
I
don't know.
From one perspective, people would say yes, because if there is no other means for them to provide for themselves, then, mind you, provide for themselves within the confines of that system, then that is the best they can do for themselves with what they have. People all struggle to envision a system that people can provide for themselves still without those sort of structures, though, right? Like, if these folks weren't playing for the NFL, what might they be doing? Is probably the rationale that they understandably go to, because envisioning an entirely different system is particularly difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we just keep brushing up against the end of capitalism in this discussion. Like, but I think you're right. Like, imagining a different system is pretty hard for us to do, and imagining a system that doesn't sort of thrive on the exploitation and dehumanization of others, or even like an entire class of people, like you're talking about, is sort of shocking, or it's too much. It's a bridge too far for most folks, for all of us, I guess it would seem, since we're all doing the capitalist thing. But yeah, it's really intriguing to think about sports as a great analogy, which I think fits really well. And, you know, just as sort of an aside, but it's like you look at these athletes too. Like, what was it, 2 weeks ago that Tyreek Hill, did you guys see the video of him getting arrested?
Yeah. Like,
so this person who is an NFL superstar, wealthy, but outside of that space, is still being treated like a second class citizen. So there's, you know, there's a space also that affords people these moments of sort of public prestige. But at the end of the day, there's all these things that happen to folks that still sort of, I think Black people in particular, that remind them that in fact, they are not on the same footing as the rest of us? And how did that, how does that play into the whole dynamic of what it, like the going back to the film, like inhabiting bodies and minds in order to extract whatever value sort of the board folks are looking for?
Yeah. Extract value. Yeah,
I mean, I think like when your desired outcome doesn't change, even if the social norms and mores and rules and laws around it do, like you still end up with roughly the same system. It just looks different, right? We just call it fancier things, right? Mm-hmm. It's not slavery, it's whatever the hell the transfer of the mind from one person to another is supposed to be. And you know, and they had the people on the TV like saying it works better when you go along with it. You know, it's fundamentally the same thing, right? It's the capitalization on someone else's literal body in this case, in terms of slavery and labor and everything else, like their time and their life for their production. But yeah, I mean, it just, unless what you're looking to achieve changes, unless look at, then we'll just continue to find perhaps nicer permutations of slavery, right? In the instance of Get Out, it looks and it sounds maybe nicer from some people's perspective, but ultimately it is still the robbing of someone's life.
Yeah.
Nicer or more obscured versions, more more hidden. I mean, I'm thinking about the fact that, like, you know, prisons are allowed to contract out inmates to, depending on the state, but prisons are allowed to contract out inmates to work all sorts of jobs that they get paid like pennies on the hour for or something. I don't want to like overstate anything because I don't know the facts, but I think some of the southern states will literally like rent inmates out to like companies like McDonald's and Carl's Jr. and some of these fast food places. So just sort of another instance of this idea of the way that we use other people to satisfy our sort of desire for I don't know.
I think easy fixes. The thing, right? It's not even necessarily malicious, right? It results often in disregard, but we in California use a bunch of inmates to fight fires all the time. It's an easy fix because it's expensive to fight fires. So we use inmates to do it. Now, does that afford them the potential to join like Cal Fire and stuff after they get out? Yeah. Do they still get paid pennies? Yeah. I mean, I don't know their pay rate, but I know it's not good. Within that system, though, it's like, well, it's an opportunity for them that they wouldn't have otherwise. And, you know, and we need to, you know, budgets are hard. And well, when you're looking for the easy fix, you can always find one.
Yeah. But I think a lot of this conversation is revolving around the idea of people being seen sort of as property, and as property that you can acquire and do what you like with. And I think, you know, they're sort of an answer to, or maybe not like a complete answer, but a partial solution to how do we work through this and how do we resolve these things happening. And I go back to the bored white people theory, in that part of the reason that these people are doing this is because maybe they haven't found that spiritual aspect of their life. Maybe they haven't found that inner vitality that we're talking about. They haven't connected to something that's beyond themselves in a way. And that is what is leading them to allowing to see other people as property and as things that they can kind of like take and dispose of when they want. And so I think it's maybe a call to those people and to everyone in general to say, that's something that we each need to deal with on a personal level so that we're no longer seeing other people or treating other people as sort of like it's, you know, I go back to like a lot of different spiritual traditions, Joseph Campbell and I forget, like maybe Otto Ronk or something like that, but talking about like the thou versus the it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're in a capitalist and a consumer society, we tend to see things and people as it's a lot. And it's are things that we don't have a connection to, things that we don't have a relationship with, mm-hmm. as opposed to the thou and seeing others as a thou, seeing other animals, other things. They're no longer it's, they're the thou. And that's the relationship part that might be missing there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, this is its own podcast unto itself, this topic that I'm going to bring up. But like, I wonder, you know, what the contribution of the mechanization and like industrialization of our societies has been in contributing to that view of others as it. I think it's happened in different eras of our civilizations, but typically from like a caste perspective or like a, this person is chosen by God, this person is not. And so I think it was perhaps hierarchical, but I'm not sure it was, obviously in some ways, again, it was humanizing. There's the untouchables and things like that. But I'm just curious if we're trying to come out of the effects of those sort of things still, right? The sort of religious anointing of some and the, like the almost righteous shunning of others in that sort of era, and then the mechanization of this person is their ability to produce goods and nothing else that we're still trying to kind of extract ourselves from. And how that relates to get out is again kind of that this is the natural progression of your body is a vessel for my interest, my like vitality, my continued livelihood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know, man. That's a big, you're right. That is a big topic, Jason.
Yeah. It's sort of like, because you are this thing, you are in this category that I see, that gives me the ability to treat you this way, to do this thing to you, to utilize you in whatever way I see fit. Whereas I might not do that with other categories, perhaps. Sorry, Anil.
No. I mean, I think I'm glad that you said that. I think I was thinking more along the lines of, I don't know that I could make any sort of like clear rational explanation for how industrialization sort of affected that process. But I guess what I'm thinking about is like, I'm going back to Michael talking about spirituality or some sort of way for people to connect with themselves and with others and to find a way out of looking at others as something disposable or something for their own. Like we talked about extracting value, like how can I take from this thing, if people are things, what I need or what I want, or what's going to sort of like make me feel the way I want to feel for a moment. And I don't know.
Very
I mean,
consumeristic in that sense, right?
Of course. Yeah, I think so. And I think as someone who has a lot of like religious issues and sort of trauma, it's hard for me to sort of trust the word spirituality when it comes to learning how to love someone else or how to honor the other, because I think for a long time, you know, spirituality or even religious practices are things that have been used to enforce those categories. So I guess the thing I was going to get to eventually was Jason's, this idea of like, it really would take a pretty massive sea change or, you know, a lot of ideological creativity to shift the way that we think and act in order to realize some of these ideas that we're talking about.
I mean, Richard Rohr's, and yeah, I'm sure there's other folks that kind of contributed to this, but like the order, disorder, reorder, and, you know, Anil, I think religion is that epitome that of order, right? It's this, it must be done this way. And I think we're talking about like spirituality and this change in how we interact with each other and value each other as this reorder. And I feel like the movie Get Out is perhaps a really good encapsulation of this moment of disorder, right? Like taking this movie and showing it like 30 years ago would have been scandalous. Right. Where these nice white people like who are, there's a psychologist and a doctor and like, you know, all the, and they, you know, they got these nice friends in the nice area and like, and this guy just goes into there, he's invited into the home and just kills them all. And it's such an interesting movie that it, I don't, it feels like it must have just been such good timing and or such good production, writing, directing, all that, that it like it found this moment that it could exist and not just be, and maybe it was, and maybe we were not part of the people that thought that it was atrocious, but I think that it's interesting that it feels like this moment of disorder where it's like we're just gonna turn this all on its head, and that if it was too early, it would have been really maybe even dangerous, right?
What do you think would be the reorder from that then? So the order, the disorder of Get Out, what's this supposed to be the end result from this?
Like what are we
gaining from this?
Yeah, I feel like that question is directed at you, Jason. Take us there.
I mean, I think...
Bring us home.
I think it's... like, you know, to be cheesy about it, like, we need a fundamental perspective shift. Right? And to me, kind of that's what this film does. Is like, it for me, it was a very effective tool and medium to say, like, you will never walk in this, literally, like walk in these people's bodies, but here's what it would look like and feel like to be there, right? To be amongst your own people and be horrified and rooting against them, to worry about when a cop pulls up and like, or when a police car pulls up, and then be relieved when it's not the police. Like it was a perspective change that says, you know, people's experiences are different and, you know, there's something wrong going on here.
Yeah.
Right? Like let's eject from this system. Mm-hmm. Let's get out.
I think that's it. Yes. I think that's it, because you're speaking to the fact that there needs to be something in popular culture, which I think Get Out is, and something that's like widely accessible to many different audiences, showing that when this particular type of thing happens, which we're kind of revolving around throughout this conversation of the person's life or body being snatched in many different forms and in many different levels of society, this is what happens to that person. This is their experience that they have during that. And this is what they're going through. And let's try to understand that. And let's try to empathize with that so that this kind of thing doesn't continue happening. And so I think that's where that reorder comes in of, okay, now we have a perspective shift. We've seen it from the other side. We're seeing it from inside the person who maybe we're kind of taking advantage of in many different instances. And now, where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm.
Good movie.
Silence is telling.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think? We're about 50 minutes in. Do you think that's a good time to wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good place to end, actually, with that question.
Okay. Okay, we're not going to answer that question, obviously. To be determined in the near or far future, perhaps.
Yeah, in everybody's next life.
As long as we're not
life.
Taking over somebody's body.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I realized that my audio is off from the video with you guys. Does it appear okay to you?
I can hear you just fine, yeah.
I think it's been fine.
Okay. There's not like big gaps from when I, okay. Cause I think my audio is correct, but the video is not on my end. It's like there's a slight lag. So I'm just responding to the audio and not watching the video.
we'll see what happens. We'll upload this soon to both video and audio formats for the viewing public. And, maybe the audio will be the better, the better version. Who knows? But I think it sounded good. And I like this format. It seemed like a good way to structure a conversation, and I appreciate both of you guys for joining me and for rehashing this podcast. So we're gonna try to do this somewhat consistently, right? I don't know, maybe we're gonna try to do one next week, indeed. Right? That was the idea. Okay.
Next Sunday? Sure. Is that what you want to do again?
Can we?
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about it off air. I think we're gonna try to do every other week normally, but maybe we could do one next week and then do every other week from there. I know we're all busy men. We got things going on.
That's true.
And so the next film we're gonna do is The Lighthouse. Great psychological horror flick, I guess. I don't know if it's horror necessarily, but
pretty horrible things in it.
A good one to talk about. And I'm gonna put it on YouTube to come up with the theory, the grand theory for next podcast. So we'll be in conversation about who's gonna lead off the show next time. Okay.
That's good.
No pressure. All right, guys. Well, it was great. I appreciate your time, and looking forward to talking to you both again soon. This has been Reconstructing the Psyche with Michael, Jason, and Anil. Talk to you next week. Bye.